Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Pesach with Rabbi Meir Schweiger. Spend 3 weeks at the Pardes summer program falling in love with the Jewish text by day and with Jerusalem culture by night. Find out all the details at www.pardes.org.il. Also, as you join your family and friends at the Pesach table, I urge you to tell them about this podcast and also about Pardes, both Pardes this summer. There's the summer program. There's the executive seminar for 1 week of excellent learning. And if there are any college students at the Seder table, please suggest to them that they investigate the Pardes year program for after they graduate, or as a year after graduate school or during graduate school. Pardes is a fantastic place. You study with amazing teachers, and the community is a wonderful thing. So I urge you to talk about Pardes and mention the podcast as well. Remember to tell people that they don't need an iPad nor an iPod for the podcast, though you can use either one. And the reason is because people don't realize that the podcast is available from the website. That's podcasts.pardesusa.org, the website for the podcast. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses Pesach. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member at Pardes and also serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week, we will be celebrating the festival of Pesach, commemorating the Exodus, our movement from slavery to freedom. Instead of looking at this week's Torah reading, I would like to speak about slavery and freedom, perhaps the main theme of our Pesach Seder. Let us start by looking at the four questions. We can actually split up the four questions into two sets. The first two questions, which speak about how this night is different, in that we eat matzah and maror, and the second set, which speaks about how this night is different, in that we dip and recline. For the moment, let's assume that the eating of the matzah and the maror may remind us of the enslavement. The dipping and the reclining are characteristic of a free people, a dignified people, royalty. So there is a certain paradox that on this night we interweave slavery and freedom, perhaps to even highlight this point. The dipping itself we do in salt water. So what is it? Is it an expression of freedom or of slavery, or both? Let's look at the matzah. We begin the section known as the Magid by breaking the middle matzah. And many of us are familiar with the fact that when the middle matzah is broken, we take the larger piece and usually hide it for the afikoman. And this becomes one of many examples of how we do things to keep the kids engaged, excited. But in fact, the main reason why we break the matzah is because of what we immediately say in Aramaic. Ha lachma anya diachala avotana ba'ara de Mitzrayim. This is the poor bread that our forefathers ate in the land of Egypt. And I purposely translate this as the poor bread, or perhaps the bread of the poor. And this is based on a rabbinic exposition of a very important verse which appears in Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 3, which says, do not eat upon the Pesach offering, chametz. 7 days you should eat upon it, matzot. Lechem Oni, which is generally translated as the bread of affliction. As I mentioned, the rabbis make an exposition of this verse, which says, It is written as ani, which means a poor person. And hence they say, just as a poor person eats pieces, broken pieces, so too the matzah of the mitzvah is a broken piece. Furthermore, they say that the word oni is related to the word oneh, which means to say out loud. And then they make the drash, which is, lechem she'onin alav dvarim harbe. This is the bread upon which we recite many things. Taking these two drashot together, this is why we break the bread. We are about to recite the Haggadah. We are about to begin the Magid, the telling of the story. The telling of the story must be recited over the matzah, but not just over any matzah, but over a matzah which reminds us of our impoverishment, over the poor man's matzah, the matzah which is a broken piece. And hence, if I go back to what I said earlier, ha lachma anya, this is the bread, the poor man's bread, which our forefathers ate in Egypt. This is why I said earlier that when we ask in the four questions, every night we eat chametz, tonight we eat matzah, the deeper meaning of that question is, why are we eating matzah, which is poor man's bread? Why are we eating the matzah, which reminds us of the enslavement? If we needed to put this perhaps in a more modern context to illustrate this, the Jews, who in many ways were enslaved during the Holocaust, were given rations, scraps, and any scraps which they had, they would grab. They didn't have the luxury to have a whole piece, a whole loaf. So that the matzah reminds us of what it means to be impoverished, of what it means to not have the luxury of having a whole matzah, a whole loaf of bread, but having to survive on scraps. Maybe let me add to that. The matzah itself, which is baked very, very quickly, also reflects the lack of time to be able to invest in the food that we're eating. The need to make something which is what we would call fast food, because we don't have time to waste making food, let alone eating it. Because one who is enslaved is constantly being rushed, being pressured to keep on working. They cannot calmly, comfortably sit down and have a meal. But that is one side of the coin. But there is another side of the coin. Very interestingly, in the same verse which I mentioned, the one which speaks about lechem oni, the continuation of the verse is, ki b'chipazon yatzata me'eretz Mitzrayim, because with great haste you left the land of Egypt. And then it says, leman tizkor, so that you should remember, et yom tzeitcha me'eretz Mitzrayim, the day that you left the land of Egypt, kol yemei chayecha, all the days of your life. Which means that the same verse which speaks about the matzah as being lechem oni says that the reason why we eat it is to remember the great haste with which we left Egypt. Not the enslavement, but the deliverance, the redemption. And in fact, when we actually are about to eat the matzah, before we eat it, we give an explanation for why we eat it. And the explanation which is given, matzah zel shuma, why do we eat this matzah? Because our doughs did not have the chance to rise until God delivered them, redeemed them from Egypt, which means that the redemption was so quick, we weren't able to wait for the dough to become chametz. We needed to immediately leave. But how does this go together? We speak about the matzah, reminding us of the redemption, of the swiftness of the redemption, and yet we call it lechem oni, the bread of our affliction. Let me point out an interesting parallel. In Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 3, we speak about another bread, which could also be called the bread of our affliction, the manna. And it says in verse 3, "And God afflicted you, and God made you starve, and he gave you the manna, which you did not know, which your forefathers did not know, in order to let you know that not on bread alone does a person live, but rather on that which comes out by the mouth of God does a person live." And then if we skip to verse 5, "V'yadata im levavecha," you should know with your heart, that as a man, and this can be translated as causes suffering or disciplines his son, so too does God discipline you. And if I skip to verse 16, once again it says, "God gave you to eat the manna in the desert, which your forefathers did not know, in order to afflict you, in order to test you." And then the end is, "in order to do good to you in your end." If I take all these verses, even though it doesn't say so explicitly, but we can somehow, by piecing them together, say that the manna, was also the bread of affliction. God gave it to us to afflict us. What was the point of the affliction? To test us. What was the point of the test? To discipline us. To ultimately do something which would be good for us. What is this good which comes about by this bread of affliction? To make us realize that ultimately our lives are dependent upon God. To make us realize that ultimately it is God who provides for us. If I bring it back to the story in Egypt, the matzah reminds us of this immediate transformation that happened. One moment we were slaves, the next moment we were freed. And not only that, but how important it was to go out at that moment. Let me skip for a second. If we go back to the original Exodus story, which we've been speaking about on previous occasions, this is in Exodus chapter 12. The first Seder which the Jews experienced before they left Egypt. I would like to look at one verse, and that verse speaks about the matzah. In chapter 12, verse 17, it says, "Ushmartem et ha-matzot." You should guard the matzot. What does it mean to guard the matzot? Guard the matzot means make sure they don't become chametz. Guard them to make sure that you finish the whole process within 18 minutes. Because otherwise, the dough will rise. It will become chametz. There is actually a positive requirement here to actively guard it, the matzah, for the purpose of the matzah of mitzvah, which is why we, in fact, eat shmura matzah which is guarded at the Seder night. The rabbis actually make an interesting drash on this pasuk and say that when it says ushmartem et ha-matzot, you could also read it as ushmartem et ha-mitzvot, guard the mitzvah. And they say, mitzvah haba liyadcha, if a mitzvah comes to your hand, al tachmitzena, don't let it sour. Don't let it be a lost opportunity. Do it immediately. Which means that the rabbis see in this mitzvah of guarding the matzah, the idea of being diligent, the idea of not losing an opportunity. And if I now play this back, we eat the matzah to remember the swiftness of the redemption. Perhaps the point which is being made is, we remember that there was this moment of truth. It's now or never. We had a window of opportunity of leaving Egypt. And had it not been then, perhaps it may not have happened. And the idea is to appreciate that opportunity, to make the most of that opportunity. Now let me go back to Deuteronomy in that section which speaks about the manna, chapter 8. In that section, chapter 8, verse 6, after talking about the manna, It then says, V'shamarta et mitzvot Hashem Elokecha. Guard the statutes of the Lord. La'alechet bidrachav, to walk in His ways. Li'yirauto, to fear Him. It's not coincidental that it says, guard the commandments of God. Parallel to what we have by the matzah. But even more so, in verse 11, it says, Hishamar lecha, beware to you. The same root, to guard. Guard yourself. Or maybe I should say, guard yourself from yourself. And the verse continues, lest you forget the Lord your God, that you do not guard His commandments and His statutes. And then verse 12, lest you eat and become satisfied, and you build good houses and settle in them. And in verse 13, and your cattle and your sheep increase, and your silver and gold increase, and all that you have increases. And then in verse 14, and you become arrogant. Your heart is lifted up. You forget the Lord your God. And if I skip to verse 17, which, by the way, is after the verse that comes back to the story of the manna. And you say in your heart, Kochi va'otzem yadi asali et ha'chayel hazeh. The strength and the power of my hand has made for me all of this wealth. Perhaps these verses illustrate to us another dimension of the difference between matzah and between chametz. Beware when you eat, when you're full, when you're extremely successful, lest your heart becomes lifted up, lest you become arrogant, lest you become bloated, bloated like the chametz. And you come to the point where you say, it is me, my strength, the power of my hand, that has accumulated all this wealth. In rabbinic literature, and this point is developed quite a bit in Hasidic literature, chametz is always associated with hubris, arrogance. Se'or shebi'isa, the leaven in the dough, which causes it to rise, is connected with the yetzer hara, the evil inclination. The idea that we somehow lose proportion of who we really are. We become overinflated. We come too caught up with, it's me, and forget that whatever we have is the gift of God. So let me now try to bring this back a little bit. We started off by saying, the matzah is the poor man's bread, the broken bread, the pieces, what reminds us of how we have to scavenge, of how we don't have the time, the luxury, to sit down comfortably and eat. But there's another aspect of the bread of our affliction. The bread of our affliction is also the bread that disciplines us. The bread that helps us keep perspective, just like the manna. The bread that reminds us, don't become complacent. Don't become too filled with yourself. Don't become lazy. Grab opportunities. Don't let them go by. And perhaps more significantly, remember that the purpose of freedom is to be in relationship with God. Freedom is not to put ourselves on a pedestal. Freedom is the ability to actually see who we truly are, what our place is, to actualize ourselves. The word matzah is related to the word in Hebrew mitzui, mitz, juice, squeeze, to squeeze ourselves to the fullest, to maximize our potential. To not be less than what we are, but also not to try to be much more than what we are. And that takes a tremendous amount of inner discipline. The same matzah can remind us of our impoverishment, but the same matzah can also, maybe because of that, a reminder that gives us perspective. To not become carried away with who we are. To not become enslaved to our creature comforts, to not be enslaved to our egos. If we look at the Maror, we perhaps see a similar type of phenomenon. The Maror, bitter herbs, clearly are there to remind us of our enslavement, of the bitterness of our enslavement. It is very interesting to note that according to the Mishnah Masechet Pesachim, the preferred type of maror is lettuce. Lettuce which is very common in Israel, known as chasa. The third bitter herb on the list is what we today call chrein, horseradish. For many people whose roots were in Eastern Europe, where it was extremely difficult, if not impossible, to get lettuce to eat as maror, horseradish became the standard for what we eat as the maror. But in fact, certainly for those of us who are living in Israel, but even in America, we now have the ability to do it according to the ideal way, which is to have the lettuce. And yet I'm sure that at least some of you will be saying to yourselves, but I don't get it. How could the lettuce be what's preferred if in fact lettuce is sweet? Horseradish is something which is very sharp, which is very difficult to eat. That should be what's preferred. And there is a statement in the Talmud which says that the reason why the lettuce is preferred in the Babylonian Talmud, it says, because it starts off soft, but ends up being hard. Which means, and here there could be a few ways of reading it, but it could be that perhaps the leaves are sweet, but the stalk is hard, bitter, not tasty. It could be also that if you leave it lying around, it loses its sweetness and develops a bitter, acidic taste. In the Jerusalem Talmud, rather than using the term soft and hard, they use the term sweet and bitter. And the point which they want to make is that slavery is not something which is so clearly bitter. Sometimes slavery actually begins being very sweet. Only later does it become bitter. And the story of Egypt illustrates this in two ways. First, when the Jewish people originally come down to Egypt, their coming down to Egypt was actually very, very sweet. There was a famine in the land. Egypt is where the food is. Not only is Egypt where the food is, but Joseph is in charge of the food. Not only is Joseph in charge of the food, but Pharaoh, who very much wants Joseph to remain with him, will do everything to have his family be settled well in Egypt, and says to Joseph, bring them down to Egypt, settle them in the best area that we have. The original coming down of the Jewish people to Egypt was very, very sweet. And in fact, we see the last verse in Parshat Vayigash is that the Jews are grabbed by the land. They are fruitful, they multiply, they flourish there. In many ways, the land of Egypt has become their promised land. Little do they realize how enslaved, in fact, they are, because they can, once they're in Egypt, they cannot just pick up and go. And we even see this when Jacob dies. Joseph needs to come up with some plan to be able to get him buried in the land of Israel. Pharaoh sends a heavy entourage to accompany them, and at the same time makes sure that they will come back by keeping the little children and the flocks, their possessions in Egypt. Which means, yes, the land of Egypt offers them tremendous promise, but they are enslaved there. They are stuck there. They can't leave there. There's a very interesting midrash that says, when Pharaoh in the beginning of Exodus sees the Jews as being a threat, he comes up with a brilliant scheme to begin the process of their enslavement. He starts walking around Jewish neighborhoods with a pail and a trowel and starts laying the foundation of what will be magnificent feats of architecture, major building projects for the Egyptian Empire. And when the Jews gather around, who could possibly stand there watching Pharaoh lay the foundation and not participate? And that is how Pharaoh lures them into a trap. The enslavement of the Jewish people began when they somehow became entrenched in Egypt. Perhaps it's the creature comforts. Perhaps it's the desire to not be nomads, but to finally settle down. Perhaps it's the desire to become part of some great empire. The Jews, in order to make it in Egypt, allow themselves to become enslaved. How many times do people want to get some prestigious job, and in order to be able to get it, they are prepared to do the most outrageous things, to work absolutely crazy hours, to perhaps even accept minimal wages. But the important thing is to be able to say, I made it. Yes, that was a conscious decision that you made, but perhaps it was a conscious decision to enslave yourself. And therefore, to think of slavery as just being the beatings and the whippings, the exploitation, and to not see there may be another element of slavery, which may be that I am making a ton of money, working in a very prestigious firm, but I'm miserable. I don't enjoy what I do. Perhaps I don't get the even respect that I should for what I'm doing. But I can't leave my job because it's too hard to maybe get something comparable, even though I'm so unhappy. That too is enslavement. What have I been trying to bring up or reflect upon? The boundaries between slavery and freedom are not so clear-cut. It could very well be that there are many situations where we seem to be free, but in reality are enslaved. And the other side of the coin is, there may be situations where it seems that we are leading perhaps a Spartan existence, as the Jews in the desert eating the manna, and yet may be experiencing true freedom. Let me conclude with the following idea. Freedom, ultimately, is the maximizing of my human potential, not less, not more. To be able to know who I am and to be able to actualize that to the fullest. Very often people try to be much more than what they are, and similarly, very often people are treated and made to be much less than what they are. The challenge is for us to find that middle place, to be able to have that discipline. And perhaps this is why on the Seder night, we need to recall the enslavement. We need to recall the difficulties, especially when we are living well, to be able to put in perspective who we are, and perhaps sometimes to ask ourselves, are we really living well? Are we really maximizing our potential? Are we really happy with what we're doing? Do we really take advantages of opportunities that we have? These are all very, very serious questions, which I ask myself every Pesach at the Seder. And this is how, at least for me, I try to somehow experience what the rabbis say, that it is as if I myself have left Egypt. Mitzrayim, Egypt, means being constrained. How is it that I can somehow leave the narrowness of my life, expand my horizons? And what exactly are those expanded horizons? These are questions to ask ourselves, not only at the Seder, but every day of our lives. Pesach Sameach V'Kasher. May we all find our way to go from slavery to freedom. Chag Sameach, Shabbat Shalom.
I will join Rabbi Schweiger in wishing you a wonderful Pesach. Also, note that we will have a new podcast episode for next week. Till then, thanks for tuning in.